You've heard this before, and maybe you know it by now, or maybe it's something you're still learning. Work. Work is good for the soul, says Ralph Quilling from Eureka, Montana, where he has spent the past 60 years running the family sawmill. One of the featured guests in the January edition of Rural Montana magazine. Another is Terry Tatsy from Browning, who at age 63 just competed in another Indian National Finals rodeo. His first was more than 35 years ago. Yep, today, Voices of Montana. It's Rural Montana Live, the statewide radio show of Rural Montana magazine, published by the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. That ahead today on Voices of Montana. Ryan Hall's in studio. Ryan, what's up?
How you doing? Haven't seen you since last year.
Last year. It's been so long. Hot minute, as they say. Thank you for being here. We're going to talk about, and Ryan, of course, the communications director for Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Chat with him frequently throughout the year. He's also the editor, an award-winning editor, of Rural Montana Magazine. And this is the, we call it Rural Montana Live, statewide radio show of this magazine. Really, really cool stuff we're doing. Look at what you got, what you dug up this for January.
You know, one thing that I try to hold on ever since I've been in journalism, my first editor told me, everybody has a story. If you came in someday and didn't have one, he handed you a phone book and you called someone until you found their story. And there's amazing stories out there in Montana.
Well, let's first tell Terry Tatsy's story. He's probably got quite a story to tell because he has been a guy who made his first Indian National Finals rodeo 35 years ago, just came back from a trip from another Indian Nationals Finals rodeo. Good morning, Terry. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
So where does it hurt?
Probably a little bit of a hurt place anymore.
I know. Talk about your love for the rodeo. I guess I should explain this a little bit. Because you've been doing this for a lot of years. And you're based out of Browning. You're a Glacier Electric Cooperative trustee member. And Ryan ran into, well, Ryan, why don't you tell a story of how you met Terry and why it's so interesting?
Well, actually, John Aliyah Tatsy, who works at Glacier Electric, sent me a photo of Terry from his Facebook at the national finals and said, you should probably do something on this. And she was absolutely right. And I talked to Terry, and one of the things that comes out in the article that I think is really important that Terry can talk to is the difference in the Indian rodeos as opposed to some of the circuit rodeos you see.
Yeah, just a little background on myself. I was born and raised here on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, and horse culture has always been a big part of our family, and there's just a strong connection between our ways of being and that are tied to horses. And so growing up on a family ranch, doing all the ranch work, and just got an interest in rodeo. Probably not more so in my early 20s, and competing, and just did what I could. But traveling around and meeting people has been one of the biggest benefits of my, I would say, part-time rodeo career. And I really enjoy learning from other tribes that I've rodeoed at and visited with, and the rodeos that we go to for the international finals are held throughout the United States and Canada, and it's so good to learn about other tribes and their relation to horse culture and their area and place where they have been since time immemorial. And it's just a good learning experience. A little slower pace than the Montana Pro Circuit rodeos. And so we have time to meet people, visit, and just enjoy everything that goes on there.
Yeah. Well, tell us some of the things that then you've learned from other Native American cultures. What sticks with you? And especially like you say, the Blackfeet, you're very close to horses. And I know a lot of Native American cultures are like that. But what sticks with you?
Another thing that I really enjoy, whether I'm up in White Swan, Washington, or, you know, when I rodeoed, went to a few rodeos down in Arizona, is how the people understand their relationship to place and how their livelihoods, their ways of life, their culture is so intertwined with landscape and their natural world around them. And so that's something that I really can connect with, because we as Piikani people, we're part of the Umpscopi Pitani, the southern Blackfoot here in Montana. You know, I can relate to a lot of the ways the stories that I've learned from other tribes, because you're connected to place, your stories, your relationships, and your responsibilities that you have to that place are so important, and they're so intertwined in your culture, your language, in the way you conduct yourself. And I just think that's so valuable, and that I've learned and observed from other tribes, and it's something that I will continue to learn and experience as I move on in life.
One thing that we talked about, Terry, that I found really interesting, too, is how rodeo has changed for you. It went from you competing to becoming a family event with your kids and now your grandkids.
Yeah, when you're younger, you're doing a lot for yourself and just having that experience. But as you move on and you mature a little bit more and you start your own family, you know, you really want to take the time to teach your children the responsibility that goes along with rodeo. Rodeo is fun. It's competitive. You meet a lot of people. But along with rodeo and the responsibility that you have to your horses, taking care of them, the health of them is really important. So the animal husbandry part of it is really, really important and critical. And also the stories of our family and our connection with horses, you got to transfer that information to your children. And then, share a good story. My daughter and I, we made it both to the international finals in San Carlos, Arizona in 2007. So that was really a great experience for myself and my daughter. Now my grandchildren, I enjoy traveling around with them, and but my oldest granddaughter is starting to compete. So she's learning the ropes, as well as the responsibility of caring for her horses and all the things that go along with that, meeting people. So it's just it's become more of a good, fulfilling experience anymore than it was when I was just competing myself.
Terry Tatsy is with us from Browning area as we're talking about his 35 years in the National Indian Rodeo Finals, not every year. But his first was 35 years ago, just competed recently here on Rural Montana Live. Ryan Hall's in studio. I'm Tom Schultz. Terry, it was good, actually, to get back probably on the circuit last year for a lot of the rodeo participants. Talk about missing it for 2020.
Yeah, last year was, in 2021, we'll say, was very special because, of course, things were shut down in 2020 because of COVID, and a lot of the tribal respective tribal nations set up protocols and processes to stop a lot of the activities that were annual events. And out of respect for those tribal nations and the responsibilities they had to their people, they closed down a lot of their events. So we didn't get to travel. We stayed home pretty much and got to do some family things and rides to Chinese olives and sort of activities, but you know, there wasn't no rodeos and INFR in 2020. So 2021 was really special. We get to go out and travel, even though it may have been limited. We did get to go out and actually get to go to Canada once, and so just got a little taste again, an experience of the rodeo and competition and the people related to all that. And I was fortunate enough to qualify to Las Vegas to the INFR, the 45th, and it was very special. Sometimes the challenging part is going places, not knowing if some of your friends and colleagues, made it through the COVID challenge we all faced, and so there is a little bit of wonderment on our part if I would see our old friends and competitors, but to make it there and see a lot of them competing was very special, and I really enjoyed it and treasured this past year because just kind of started things up again.
I read somewhere, Terry, that you were the nephew of Chief Earl Oldperson, and I know that he has passed recently, and we've chatted about that with members of your tribe. And again, our condolences would go out. But I would ask you some thoughts about Chief Earl Oldperson, having been pretty close to him.
Yeah, late Chief Earl, he was married to my Aunt Doris Bullshit Oldperson, and he was a real advocate of the horse culture. He had a family ranch, him and Doris, out at Star School, and always had horses around the place and rode horses a lot. That's a part of the lifestyle that he really enjoyed, his private way of life. He really, really appreciated and enjoyed that way of life because it was private. His other life was very public, and he was out in the public a lot. The other thing that he did related to horse culture was continued our ways of racing horses. Myself and a cousin of mine, we took care of the race horses when we were in our late teens, and he was just so much enjoyed. Whether horses won or lost, he had a special connection with these animals and just loved horses and the ceremonies. He knew a lot of the ceremonies that were tied to the horse culture. He knew a lot of the songs, our Blackfeet songs, that were tied to horse culture. So he lived it fully and appreciated every bit of it.
Yeah, thank you for that. How important is it culturally to have an Indian National Finals rodeo and kind of follow through with the mission that folks like your uncle, the late Chief Earl Oldperson, had wanted to keep alive in preserving your traditions?
Besides the competition and the camaraderie, it really provides the venue for a lot of our younger people to get out and experience something and meet people that maybe they may not otherwise have. When you have young kids that a lot of times don't get to leave the reservation because of financial hardships and just don't have the resources, and the family doesn't either, sometimes they jump in with their relatives or their friends, and they'll drive from Arizona to Montana or Canada, and without having the International Finals Rodeo as the target, the year-end target, a lot of them wouldn't get to leave home and experience other places, so it's very important.
Terry, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for your thoughts and for your effort. Good luck to you. I know we've got to run. One of your goals is to have three generations of your family in the Indian National Finals Rodeo. Make that happen, sir. And thank you very much, Terry.
We're big fans of stability. It's not something you hear every day, but in an industry as volatile as agriculture, it's really good to know. At Northwest Farm Credit Services, we've been financing the needs of farmers and ranchers for over 100 years, through thick and thin, because we believe in what we do and who we do it for. So if partnering with a stable lender sounds good to you, give us a call. We'd be happy to help. Northwest Farm Credit Services, here to help you grow. Equal opportunity provider and employer, equal housing lender.
Question of the month for January in the Rural Montana Magazine for the congressional delegation. What are your goals for Congress this year? I love that. I love that you ask those guys questions for every publication. Ryan Hall is in studio. This is the statewide radio show of the Rural Montana Magazine. We call it Rural Montana Live. Ryan Hall, Communications Director for MECA, which publishes the Rural Montana Magazine, and also the editor of that magazine. So every edition you have every month, it's a question of the month for our delegation. I think that's pretty good. But you limit them, right?
Yeah,
we 250 words,
200 words a piece.
Yeah, look at that.
200 words a piece. It's always a fun one, and it's always the one I get the most letters about, because depending on where people fall, they think someone answered the question and someone else didn't.
Yeah. Good. So, Ryan, let's talk about the upcoming here. We got Ralph Quilling here, via phone, a Eureka man going after, his fifth decade in the industry?
Yeah. Logging? He's been logging since, I think he said he was six or seven, and now he's 71.
Oh, wow.
So he's been doing it a long, long time, runs a mill by himself, and one of the more interesting guys I've talked to in a very long time. I'm anxious to have him on this morning.
Okay, this is the January edition. Is the paper out yet?
You know, normally people are used to seeing it on the second or third of the month, and that's not going to happen this month for the first time in my decade there. Like everybody, we're affected by the COVID shortages and the things that are going on. Paper mills have had issues, so they're not even printing till the 6th, so people won't get it till the middle of the month. Completely out of our hands, the printer doesn't even have paper in the building.
Why?
And that's the most interesting part. So there's two things going on. The staffing shortages everyone's had. But the other thing is there's something like 13 plants in the last 2 years that have converted from press paper to cardboard boxes.
Oh.
Because of Amazon, everyone's staying home and ordering because they're not going out shopping as much, especially in the New York, Pennsylvania hotbed areas. And Amazon needed more boxes, and they're overpaying for boxes. And so plants are converting from paper to cardboard production, and that leaves us magazines looking for paper.
That's very interesting. It's a supply and demand sort of thing. More demand in the cardboard. So 13 of those plants. That's good. I'm not sure how terribly that affects Montana, but it has those little webs.
Yep, exactly. People wouldn't know except our magazine, and people may not even notice, but the December and January issue is actually on a different paper because the mill that printed our paper closed. And while other ones are getting spun up, we're printing on a little bit lighter quality paper. And then now we can't even get that in because they had to switch so many people to that type of paper that now that's scarce.
We talked, we're going to talk with Ralph here in just a little bit. That's in the January edition. You're already working on February. There's an article in the January edition again. You can go online to the Montana Electric Cooperative Association website, and you can pick up an online edition as well. It's pretty nicely done. Net metering 101, this is from the national publication, but I have a listener who had just recently emailed me and said, I made the step forward and put these solar energy panels, what they call, I guess, distributed generation throughout the industry, because now you can be a net producer of electricity. How do you see that getting more and more, I guess, important and for us to meet our energy needs in the future?
I think that people are certainly interested in it. It's something that can help. I don't know if it'll meet the industry needs because it's, as we've talked about before, it's still variable generation. Back home today, there's 7 inches of snow in Great Falls. Your solar panels are not going to work real well today. So it certainly can be part of the answer. It's part of the equation that can help a homeowner if they want to do some more energy independence. But it is not the tell-all answer to the issues that we've discussed before.
No, but it is one of those things that people can do on an individual basis.
Absolutely.
And I need to look into it more because like 10 years ago, the cost was cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't last long enough to repay your investment on it. I think the technology has changed an awful lot when it comes to solar panels, and there might be more and more options for people on that, you know, consumer level, on that commercial level.
Yeah, and there's tax incentives out there that helps. I've seen different numbers, but usually you're looking at 18, 20-year payback now, and the panels last 25 years, so it's feasible now. It used to be the payback was 30, 35 years, and they lasted 25. So now you're starting to get there. But it's still a long time payback. But it is definitely coming closer to where it makes more sense.
And you represent a lot of the electric and energy utility cooperatives across the state of Montana. Are they embracing net metering?
Every one of our co-ops has a net metering policy. As you know, we're not under the PSC, which does have net metering, but we've all voluntarily have net metering policies that fit the various areas. Some areas have seen more of this and it's more prevalent and there's more opportunity. Some don't see it as much and there's different limits and things like that. But across the state, every one of our co-ops allows net metering.
Ryan Hall is with us. We're going to have him peer into next month's edition as we're waiting for Ralph Quilling. He'll call us here from Eureka, the guy who's been on this mill, like you said, when he first started working there at 7 years old and now in his 60s, although he just did come back from a ice fishing trip. So that was fun to chat with him. So that's upcoming here. We got to grab some headlines. Here's Brian Bennett.
I'm Angela Cadell, Group Vice President of Agricultural Products for BNSF Railway. At BNSF, we recognize producers for their hard work and commitment to provide our nation's and the world's food supply. Farming is in our DNA, and we honor you with our long-term commitment of delivering your high-quality products to market safely and consistently, no matter the season. You can count on us. This is BNSF.
Some briefs here. A sidewalk project is, well, this is a real huge fund, I think, $25 million from the Flathead Electric Cooperative Board of Trustees to kick into that sidewalk project in Evergreen. That's rather generous there. There's a new charging station along the High Line for your EV. And that's from Marias River Electric Cooperative. They installed the first ever electric vehicle charging station in the area. I guess it's coming, Ryan.
It is. It's coming quick.
Ryan Hall with us in studio. Tom Schultz alongside Northern News Network's Voices of Montana and this edition of Rural Montana Live. Let's peer into what are you working on for next week? I mean, next month.
Doing a couple of really cool things. Brandon Whitman, a manager down here at Yellowstone Valley Electric. We're going to be talking to him, do a little profile on him, and talk about being named vice chairman of the CoBank Board, which is a national financial board. Very good for him. Going to be talking about the dangers of potentially breaching the Lower Snake River dams. That's been a big conversation for a while, and it's coming up again. So we're going to, as we talk baseline generation, which you and I have talked numerous times on this show, taking baseload away right now, especially green baseload, is something that we don't think makes sense, and we want to discuss that a little bit with
people. No, and I'm glad you're getting into that, too, because that takes some time to understand all the players, the dynamics, and even all the science in why people believe that that is going to be better for the region, and why other folks are going, no, this is not the right thing to do for our region. It's not just electricity as well. It does have to do with the wildlife habitat. It's a very interesting story, and we talk about it here every now and again too. So look for that out of Rural Montana Magazine next week. A little more on that. One thing that is in the paper or in the magazine for this month as well, and I think is very important too, especially as industries need to get more and more involved and get the public aware of why they are pushing for certain policy positions and issues. And you guys have now, the electric cooperatives, have a new voice for that?
Yes. So for the longest time, we've done our grassroots action network. And in Montana, it's been very, very successful. But on a national level and local level, we are switching to a Voices for Cooperative Power. It's an online platform. It'll reach you through Facebook, keep you really updated. We can still send the videos and stuff like we have before, but this was a very enhanced version. And it's super important. When you look at co-ops across the country, sometimes we're on the opposite side of people that have a lot of money and a lot of time to do things. Co-ops don't. We're nonprofit. We're member-owned. We're not going to spend your money that way. So what we have to do is come with numbers. We have to come with a loud voice. And this is how Montanans can engage, be part of that loud voice, be part of those numbers. And it does make a difference when we go and talk to people in Congress or at the state level. All they have to do is go online to voicesforcooperativepower.com. You sign up, you put Montana as your state, and you're on the national and the Montana grassroots list.
Are you on it? How's the app work?
It works really, really good. I've just started getting on it. It's only been launched for about a month. We're part of a pilot program, actually. So they're rolling it out slowly, and we're part of that program. And so it's worked really good. It's really slick. I encourage people to go do it. We'll bother you about once a quarter. We don't spam you. Voicesforcooperativepower.com.
What are some of those issues then that you guys are – we got less than a minute here, but coming into this next year?
You're looking at the Snake River dams that we just talked about. That's something for sure. Funding coming from the infrastructure bill is going to be a big thing as well. And you just, as the administration really gets spun up in their second year, we know some things will be coming down the pike, and we just have to be ready to see how those are going to affect us.
Yeah, when it comes to energy policy, things are change. Unfortunately, that's sort of the shifting sands of the industry from administration to administration. It's just consistency is what people want, and it's hard to give them that in today's political world.
Absolutely. You know, every time there's a new president, there's a new head of the Department of Energy, a new head of the EPA and those type of things, and there's different philosophies, and every one of those affects electricity and electric co-ops.
Well, we're going to talk to a man who's the head of his own sawmill and has been for a while. Ralph Quilling of Eureka will join us next, Rural Montana Live on Voices of Montana. Back with more in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
scam artists are targeting electric cooperative customers from Missoula to Medicine Lake. Members have reported receiving calls of bills being past due and that power will be shut off unless an immediate payment is made. If you receive such a call, ask for the person's name and tell them you'll call them back at the cooperative office number. Never give out your account information. Your co-op will already have that on hand. A message from your Montana Electric Cooperatives. They do more than keep the lights on for you.
Ryan Hall is in studio here as communications director for Mecca and as well editor of this magazine, which, as you said, Ryan, is late because there's a paper shortage because people are
ordering off Amazon. They need cardboard.
We need cardboard instead. Really, why don't you tell how you launched into this story as we get Ralph Quilling lined up here.
Well, we had the photographer for the feature who's on the cover and has some great photos of Ralph in the story. He sent these photos and said, you should talk to this guy. He's my neighbor, and he's really interesting. And I called Ralph, and he absolutely is one of the most interesting guys I ever got to interview.
Ralph Quilling joins us from Eureka, from the sawmill, from the Quilling sawmill. Hey, Ralph is, by the way, thanks for being here. I appreciate that. You're with Ryan Hall, Tom Schultz. I know you went out fishing yesterday. We chatted about that. You had some luck, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
But yeah. You had to snowshoe 2 miles to get to it.
Well, we didn't. I shouldn't have said 2 miles. We snowshoed probably half, three-quarters of a mile. Then we had to climb this pretty steep pitch, and then we hiked from there. And then once you get on the lake, you know, there's only about 4 or 6 inches of snow, so that wasn't bad.
The sawmill is not enough for you? You got to go out and hike and ice fish, too?
Well, you know, that you got to keep your wind, you know, and especially you need that exercise so you get get your lungs flexible so when you have a customer at the sawmill, you can really sell your product.
Yeah, you know, Ralph, when we talked, you told me you were going to do some more ice fishing to slow down in your older age. That does not sound like a slow down trip.
Yeah, it is. You slow right down and once you get that hole augered in there and then you set your biscuits down in that bucket, start the jig, and you're pretty well slowed down.
Yeah, that's good. But it hasn't slowed down an awful lot for you. Talk about starting your very first job, I guess, was when your dad decided to buy a timber sale.
Well, they had been buying timber, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I come along, that was in the kind of the middle, well, more of the tail end of the 50s. And they bought that timber sale not too far from the house. And so that's where I got the pleasure of going up there. And they had cutting railroad ties and cants, which is a 4 and 2 inch piece of wood that they make two-by-fours out of. But anyway, I got to go out there and run the axe, because back then the chainsaws were too heavy and they fell the tree with the chainsaw then and then limbed with the axe. So I got to start out doing that. Of course, I knew all about an axe from very young.
Well, you were old. That was very young. That was 7, 8 years old.
And then, and then... That summer, on the tie pile there, things happened then. You didn't screw around going slow. So anyway, I put my picaroon in an old 7x9 large tie, and of course the tie piler, he had to go. He was in high gear and overdrive, and he picked her also, and he yarded her off there, and she landed on my big toe, and I got this dandy toe yet to this very day from that program.
We were just talking with Terry Tatsy, who's a rodeo guy, and he's been doing that for like 30-plus years as well. He's probably got about as many bumps on his body as you do.
He's probably got more. Yeah, no, I've got I've got plenty of, it's like, I don't know, 20-some years ago, I went to the doctor, he's an MD naturopath, old Steve Gordon down in Whitefish, and anyway, he said to me, he says, well, how many scars do you have? I kind of laughed, and I said, well, shoot, I never counted them.
Hey, Ralph, when we talked, one thing I found really interesting was we think of logging with all these big machines and stuff now, but when you started, you didn't have the forklifts and the big machines. You guys were muscling those things around.
I tell the boys, my boys and stuff, I says, when I was growing up and stuff, I said, there was no such thing as a forklift. You did everything by hand. Loaded the ties on the truck by hand, but, you know, you didn't pick them up and put them, load them on the truck. You had the mill you set on kind of like a three-layered little flat down a bank. So you'd skid the trees in to the old drag saw, you called it, and then went down the short skidway, 8 foot, 6 inch logs, and then went through the mill and was on another little drop down, and then below that was a truck where he loaded the truck. So
there was hard work.
Yeah, but it was good. It was like I tell people, and I think it's hard for them to understand, my brother, 2 years younger than me, we would take the cross cut. You know, I was about 8 or 9 years old, him 2 years younger. We'd take the cross cut out there, and then big larch. We'd spend all day sawing away like two little chipmunks, you know, following them big large snags, you know. And, of course, we knew, you know, growing up out there, we knew we had to look for the lean of the tree and how to notch it and everything. But, you know, I think that young, what we did and survived just fine. And I look at these younger generations, I think, holy, you know, these protect your kids, don't let them get hurt, and all this monkey business, shoot. You got to let kids be kids.
You mentioned, you know, don't let them get hurt, but we talked a lot. You've had a few incidents. Can you tell me one of the ones you remember where you got tuned up pretty good?
Well, the first go-around was two before out of the edger of the mill. It come back and drilled me in the belly. So I went from being one little, kind of little powerhouse, you know, because those stud mills, I'll guarantee you one thing, you didn't have time to even sneeze hardly. But anyway, I went from 178 to real good shape, you know, down to, when I got out of the hospital, I was 124.
Yeah.
And then when I got, and then the second real bad deal, of course, some of the things that I've had done to me, people think it was bad, but compared to them deals, they aren't bad. But when I got hit in the head and my neck broken, and that's kind of got me jacked up yet to this very day, because it's got all the vertebrae smashed down and pinched the nerves in my shoulders.
What keeps you coming back to work then, Ralph?
Well, one thing I like to work, always have. And, you know, it's just like the mill. Anything I've done, I mean, to me, there's nothing more satisfying than to see how much timber you can ship down the road in a day. I like this sawmill deal now, where I can take orders and cut people's orders out, what they want, and then I get to meet new people, and of course, people that's not familiar with sawmill, they're just amazed by the thing. You know, it's 56-inch blade with the old carriage, you know, put the log on the carriage and run her back and forth. But, yeah, it's just, I mean, life is awesome.
Hey, Ralph, I know you told me this on the phone, but for the radio audience, How much longer do you think you can do this as you're sitting there in your 70s?
Oh, another 10 years. I can go another 10 years easy.
What do you do? Are you just like eat a good diet, Ralph, or are you like a lot of loggers I know, because you burn a lot of energy? You're not too much worried about what you're eating, as long as you get enough of it.
Well, you know, I have a bride that she makes sure that I eat right.
Good.
So that helps. But, you know, of course, she doesn't bake as much as she used to, because I love them pies and and cinnamon rolls and stuff. New Year's evening, we was going to go up to the kids' place. And anyway, she'd made a pudding deal, and then she had a huckleberry pie there, and she said, "Well, take the pie, too." I says, "I'm not taking that blasted pie up." I tell you, I just can't say enough how just totally blessed I am to be able to still do what I do. And, you know, I, like old Arlie Burke, he's 83. Father Time's kind of kicking in on him here in the last year or so. But, you know, here he was on the snowshoes just humming along yesterday, too. You know, he's still out of trapping. And, yeah, but that's the key. You got to keep it going.
Keep moving. And like you say, work is good for the soul. It keeps you young. I got a text message here, Ralph. I hauled logs for Ralph years ago, and he was a hoot to work around. Good guy. That comes from a guy named Dan out of Whitefish, Dan B.
That's Dan, probably Dan Brown.
Well, it could be. You would know him, right?
Yeah.
So thanks, Dan. Thanks for that. It's fun for Ralph. Ralph, what would you tell? I know we just got like a minute and a half here. You've been in this industry a long time. The industry has changed an awful lot. You've seen a lot of those changes. You're kind of a family sawmill, the Quilling Sawmill. What do you see for this industry? What do we need to keep Montana's logging industry healthy from a veteran's perspective?
Well, what makes me sad is that the government, you know, the Forest Service especially, they're not into keeping our forests healthy or anything. You know, the mindset has got into the place where, you know, really not truly manage things properly. And so what I see for the timber industry, it's just getting harder and harder for the boys to really make a decent living. And that's like right now, like old up here, some of the boys, they got over 70 loads of logs in the deck in the woods, and they can't find any trucks to truck it, because the guys that got the extra trucks, like old Jump and down Flathead and Martin and down there in Libby, they can't find any drivers. You know, it's the timber industry, like all trades. I mean, it's something. I don't know what's going to happen, but it sure doesn't look too rosy out there for the younger boys.
And that's something we'll talk about here and keep fighting for, because there's a lot of good values in, like you say, work is good for the soul. Ralph Quilling from Quilling Sawmill in Eureka. Thanks for being on, Ralph. Thanks for being that Montanan that people can look at and go, yeah, I know people like that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much also. And keep up the good work.
We will, and you too, okay?
All right. Yep. Talk to you down
keep
the road.
Ty's coming. All right, we'll take a break and we'll come on back with final thoughts here on this edition of Rural Montana Live from the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association on Voices of Montana.
January 15th deadline to enroll in health insurance for 2022 is approaching. Let Cover Montana help you get coverage. Health insurance has never been more affordable, with most people qualifying for monthly premiums of $10 or less. It's our mission to find you the right plan and get you the credits you qualify for. Phone, virtual, and in-person appointments are available now. Visit us at covermontana.org to learn more. That's covermontana.org. We're here to help Montanans get covered.
My thanks to Terry Tatsy for joining us as well from Glacier Electric Cooperative and also a former Lincoln Electric Cooperative member, Ralph Quilling. Tom Schultz, we're back live here just finishing up Rural Montana Live with Ryan Hall in studio. Next time you and I will be on the air, it'll be in Nashville, huh?
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of the conference right now, and I tell you, looking outside, Nashville looks pretty good right now.
What are we there for, Ryan?
We're going to be there for the NRECA Power Exchange, which is the national annual meeting. I get to go every year. You get to come along this year to watch Chris Christensen's big celebration for being president of the national organization.
The only Montanan to be president of that national body.
Absolutely true.
Took the organization through a very difficult time as well. So, all right, safe travels till then. We'll see you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep, that's Rural Montana Live. Ryan Hall from Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. I'm Tom Schultz. Thanks for joining us. You guys have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.